Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, welcome to Radio Islam International. You are listening to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, a very warm and hearty welcome to all our listeners. And first up this afternoon is health news. And today we're going to be looking at no to bogus fake health inspectors campaign. And yes, that will be followed by a talk all about osteoporosis a little later in the program. And then I'll be joined by Teresa Hill, or Howe rather, who is the CEO of the National Osteoporosis Foundation of South Africa, NAFSA. And she'll be speaking to us online from Cape Town, inshallah. Well, back to health news, and to tell us more about this campaign, you know, the No to Bogus Fake or Health Inspectors campaign, we are now joined by Mrs. Amanda Mashishi, Mr. Dierwald Willemse, and also Corrie Bezuidenhout from the City of Johannesburg Health Department, Region F. Hi, good afternoon to all three of you.
Good afternoon
to the listeners.
Good afternoon, listeners.
Okay, it's wonderful to have all three of you speaking to me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Okay, now the City of Johannesburg Health Department and of course the other stakeholders will be conducting an educational awareness campaign. Could you please tell us who is the campaign really aimed at?
Good afternoon, listeners. Good afternoon, Zeenat. Yes, the campaign is actually focusing on the community, especially the business people, small businesses, in particular the food premises owners. Yeah.
Okay, so basically you are looking at those people. So, you know, with regards to the City of Johannesburg offices, now we always hear about the health department, the Johannesburg Health Department or the City of Johannesburg offices. Where exactly are they based?
Yes, first and foremost, the city is divided into 7 regions. Now, we are in Region F, which is the inner city. We are situated at 80 City Hall Street in Johannesburg Central.
Okay.
So we've got other regions, which is Region A, which is the Midrand area, Region B, which is Langlaagte, Rosebank, Region C is Roodepoort in the west, Region D is Soweto, Region E is Sandton and Alexandra, and Region F is the inner city, and Region G, which is Lanesia.
Okay, so when you say inner city, that means it's the?
It means it is the area such as where we will be conducting the campaign, which is Fordsburg, Mayfair, as well as Johannesburg Central, the CBD.
Okay. Now, obviously they mentioned there's quite a few stakeholders as well. So what will the stakeholders be showcasing, and who exactly are these stakeholders that are involved in your campaign?
Yeah, like I've mentioned now, the community is our biggest stakeholder here, as they will be informed and given knowledge on the various environmental health related issues. We'll also have the councillor there, so the councillor, the ward councillor, which for the municipal ward, he would then again encourage the community to work together with the city and to resolve challenges that affect them. We'll also have EMS, which is Emergency Management Services. So all questions related to fire equipment and gas, they will be addressing. Then primary health. Primary health will be having health screening, blood pressure testing, sugar diabetes, and also promoting healthier lifestyle through a healthier, educating people on how to have a healthy lifestyle. Then and from environmental health side, we'll also be educating people specifically now with relating to the bogus or fake environmental health practitioner or health inspectors, because people would then be able to make payment directly at the city council premises instead of paying people on site, which is actually not how it's supposed to be and which is actually done by fraudulent environmental health practitioners or health inspectors. Then also we'll be having pest control, who will showcase the various pest control methods within the city, as well as the equipment used to monitor and regulate the pests and rodents. Then we'll have SAPS, South African Police Service, specifically the Social Crime Prevention Section, where they'll actually be educating the community regarding the regarding the bogus environmental health practitioners. Then also the HPCSA, which is the Health Professions Council of South Africa. They will be again educating on how they regulate environmental health on a national level. And then we'll have the Gauteng Department of Health. They will again distinguish between Gauteng Department of Health officials as well as the officials from the City Council of Johannesburg.
Yes, indeed. So there's quite a bit going to be taking place on that day.
Yes.
But with regards to environmental health, can you give us more background on what exactly environmental health is?
Yes, Zina. The World Health Organization actually defines environmental health as follows. It is addressed at the physical, chemical, biological factors external to the person as well as related factors impacting behaviors. It encompasses and assesses the control of those environmental health factors that could potentially affect health. It is targeted towards preventing disease and creating health supportive environments. That's all in a nutshell what environmental health is all about. Also, with environmental health is performed by environmental health practitioners, or EHPs in short, who are required to study to become EHPs, and they normally study at the various universities within the city, within the country, as well as internationally as well. So no food premises can operate without a certificate of acceptability. These are the kind of things that environmental health would educate people on within the community and also at the campaign.
Is there anything else that environmental health would also be looking at?
Yes, environmental health also looks at business premises. So environmental health practitioners promote health. So we do food shop inspections, food premises, business licenses we check for. We also do outbreak investigation in case there's something like a disease outbreak from a notifiable disease such as typhoid fever or foodborne illnesses. Then we follow up and do health education to the community and also the people affected and the family members. And then also we do food quality monitoring. Again, we do ad hoc sampling. We also do water quality monitoring, where we check the municipal water supply, whether the water is safe for drinking. Then again, we do vector control, educating people on waste management, best waste management practices, and medical waste as well, where we do inspections of the public health facilities such as the clinics and the hospitals. Also again, with the better control of handling, collection, storing and transportation of medical waste.
Yes, it's amazing what they actually do, because you know, when you talk about environmental health, we probably think of just you know, the basic things that should be seen to. Anyway, now on this day, I believe there's going to be a lot of health screening taking place. So what type of health screening will be done on this day?
Yes, the health screening that will be done is blood pressure screening, sugar diabetes, and healthier lifestyle. That will be done by the clinics, yes, primary health.
Okay. Are there any special people coming in to do all of this?
Yes, the health promoters will come, and also we are mobilizing the community actually to take part in it. We've been handing out pamphlets and also been doing loud hailing in the Forsberg Mayfair area specifically relating to the campaign.
An environmental health practitioner, what exactly does his work consist of?
Yes, it consists of inspection of the food premises, business premises, water quality,
okay,
and those things. Yes.
The ones that you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Okay. And the challenges that are faced with regards to this, you know, the bogus environmental health practitioners, can you share that with us, please?
Amanda.
Hi, Gina. Amanda Mbikwana. My surname was mentioned wrongly there.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Okay, thanks for the opportunity. Okay, on the issue of challenges faced with the bogus health practitioners, the challenge is that these people are selling illegal documents.
Oh.
They threaten to close down businesses. They demand immediate cash. They even use the wrong logos of the city to issue this fake certificate and health permits. Some of these health certificates and health permits, they have a provincial department of health logo on them. They defraud the business owners, and they are not, the worst part of it, they are not trained in environmental health, which this can lead to them giving the business owners wrong information with regard to environmental health issues, which could put their lives at danger. They are also tarnishing the city's image. They are killing the environmental profession, which can lead to lack of trust of city officials.
Mm. Okay, so how then can one actually identify a certified, environmental health practitioner? Are there any particular things that they do have or should have for you to be able to allow them onto your premises for that matter?
Oh, okay. Environment health practitioners, first thing, they must be registered with Health Profession Council of South Africa, as Dievald mentioned, with a card issued by HPCSA. It includes an expiry date on it, which is renewed annually. They must have a name tag, which should have a logo of the city on it, with a name and the surname of the official. The ID card with the city's logo, which have an ID number of the official, indicating that they are appointed as environmental health practitioners. And on the same ID card, there's a signature of Dr. Bismillah, who is the executive director for health within the city. And the EHPs, environmental health practitioners, they only work for weekdays, Monday to Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. They do the site visit from 10 o'clock in the morning to 2:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And how can one confirm that the person that comes to you is, a true environmental health practitioner? Other than, of course, all these, do they have any contact details? Is there anybody that you can contact just to confirm that this person is here to do an environmental checkup?
Yes, first of all, they must just make sure that the logo that they are using, the name tag, if the person don't have a name tag, they possibly fake.
Right.
So the name tag should have the logo of the city council.
Mm-hmm.
They must also have the HPCSA card, which is issued from the HPCSA on a regular basis, on an annual basis. Then also the information that they are sharing. Ask them questions.
Mm-hmm.
Engage with them as to see whether this person is actually legitimate. You must also remember the EHP or the environmental health practitioner from the area is normally the same environmental health practitioner. So the minute somebody else comes and claims, let them produce some documentation to you to prove that it is actually environmental health practitioner. And also, if you're unsure, contact your environmental health practitioner. I will give you our number for the inner city. Our number here at our office, in case you're unsure, is 011-376-8523.
Yes. Okay. So that's the number for the inner city. I think it's a good idea sometimes just to make a quick call, just to make sure that the people that are there aren't legitimately there. In any case, with regards to the programs for this day, what are the activities scheduled?
The activities are scheduled this way. There's a program for the day.
Mm-hmm.
So on the 29th of November, from 9 o'clock, all the stakeholders and the environmental practitioners will meet at Mary Fitzgerald Square. So we'll be marching from Mary Fitzgerald Square, holding placards with different messages related to the theme that says, "No, we say no to bogus or fake health inspectors. They must stop killing our profession." Those kind of messages related to the theme. Then from there, we march to the Forsberg Flea Market, where everything will be happening on the same center.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And finally, what message would you like to bring across to our listeners out there?
the message we would like to bring across to our listeners is that be aware of the fake environmental practitioners. We call them fakes, they call them bogus, they call them fraudulent health inspectors. Know the face of your health inspector in your area. Keep the contact details in case you suspect a person to be a fake health inspector. Do not give money on site to anyone claiming to be the city officials. Look at their ID cards and name tags before allowing them to enter. Be polite and gather as much information as possible. If you suspect any behavior that is not right, you contact the numbers that Devald mentioned. There's also a national anti-corruption line, which is 0800-701-701. And giving money to a fake bogus health inspector is a criminal offense.
Okay. Well, thank you very, very much for giving us all this information. We do wish you all the best, and we hope that the whole event will be a successful one in, you know, from all of us. And we hope to our listeners would definitely go out there and support this initiative from you.
Yes, thank you, Dinat. And thank you also to
Radio for the listeners and for the opportunity.
Yes.
Okay, and all of this is happening, just before we go, what day is this happening on?
29th of November 2016.
Okay,
Tuesday.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, that's it then. Thank you so much for coming on to Amanda, Devald, and Corey. Thank you very much for sharing all that information with us. And that's it then from us. In a little while, we'll be back, and we're going to be talking about osteoporosis. And today I'll be joined by Teresa Hill from, she's obviously the CAO of the National Osteoporosis Foundation of South Africa, NAFSA, and she's from Cape Town. Also, just a reminder, those numbers are with us, the inner city number, if you, you know, for just to make sure that the people, the environmental health practitioners that come over to your place are legitimate people. So here's the number, the inner city number you can dial is 011-376-8523, and there's also an anti-corruption line which is 0800-701-701. Well, we'll be back in a few moments. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zenith, and I'm speaking to Teresa Hill, the CEO of the National Osteoporosis Foundation of South Africa, also known as NOFSA. Now, we know that osteoporosis is a lifestyle disease, and prevention is the best cure, and also that no state funding is provided for the vital preventative work required. Now, we are going to be talking about osteoporosis, and firstly, I'd like to say hi and good afternoon to Teresa. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Sister Zena.
It's wonderful to speak to you again. I think I have spoken to you in the past, not very sure when, but I think we did.
Yes,
but
we did.
Now, let's talk a little about the foundation before we go on to osteoporosis itself. Tell me more about the foundation.
You know, we've been around for about 22, 23 years. We were established in 1993, and we're a dual organization in the sense that we provide training and education to both doctors. And you know, it's very difficult to try and educate doctors. So we do have a training course for them once a year. And then our main function is to provide information to patients and to families of patients with osteoporosis, because osteoporosis is an immensely neglected disease worldwide, but especially in a country like South Africa where AIDS and malnutrition and TB takes the forefront, and osteoporosis is just way down there. So the other main function that we have is to lobby with government and with the medical aids, and that's it's a tedious job to do, but we need to do that just to make them, or try and make them more aware about osteoporosis, because all those diseases that they're really punting, all of them can cause osteoporosis in the long run. Mm. Either either the medication or the disease itself. So the foundation is mainly here to educate everyone and to lobby for the patient's rights.
Indeed. The foundation, therefore, certainly will depend on the generosity of support from the private as well as the corporate sectors to offer this kind of education and support. And as we all know, prevention is always better than cure.
Yes, absolutely. And as with most lifestyle diseases, I think lifestyle is just the most important and cheapest way to prevent the disease, which can become extremely expensive once you have fractures and that you need to treat it actively.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we want to talk a little about the various factors that contribute to the risk of developing osteoporosis. Perhaps you can share that with us. But before we go on to that, maybe just for the benefit of our listeners, because many a times we confuse osteoporosis and arthritis. Can you just clear that up for us a little?
I think it's absolutely right, because many times we get with phone calls at the foundation and I have to stop the lady or the man in the middle of their story because I can hear that they're talking about osteoarthritis. It's osteoporosis that we're talking about, and that literally means porous bones. So once your bones become thin and porous, it makes it more susceptible to fractures. Osteoarthritis attacks the joints. So the one attacks the bone itself. Osteoporosis and osteoarthritis attacks all the joints. So knee pains and hip pains and shoulder pains, that is osteoarthritis.
And I think also, why people are so confused is that many a times you suffer from both.
Yes, you can.
Mm.
Yes, you can.
So, we do tend to become a bit confused whether this is now osteoporosis or osteoarthritis. But anyway, now that it's cleared up, I hope our listeners will now, be able to identify the two. Anyways, we were talking about the various factors that contribute to the risk of developing osteoporosis. And I think you did mention something about bones. So please, let's carry on with that.
There are so many factors that can contribute to developing osteoporosis, and I'm going to list a few of them. If you've already had a fracture after any minor injury, that is having a fracture or a bone break falling from a standing height, not jumping from the roof of your house, but just falling from a standing height, then you probably have osteoporosis. Most hormonal diseases, like an overactive thyroid or overactive adrenal glands, any malabsorption disease where you don't absorb any of your foodstuffs, malignancies, cancer causes osteoporosis in the long run. It's the cancer itself and the chemotherapy or the other stuff. And then a very important thing that's very important or very... that really is close to my heart is eating disorders, especially in our teenagers. And it's not only girls that get these eating disorders, but boys get it too. So they cut out everything that's good for them, for their bones, and they can develop osteoporosis. If you're on regular cortisone use, and many people have to be on cortisone either for rheumatoid arthritis or for a lung disease, I'm not saying that you should stop using that, but you must just be aware that those drugs can cause you to lose calcium in the urine and cause osteoporosis. And the other important thing is age is still one of the biggest risk factors for developing osteoporosis. Osteoporosis is not a normal part of aging, but because we become older, we get more and more diseases, of which osteoporosis is one. If you're a woman and you've had the menopause before the age of 45, that's a risk factor. Men think they don't go through a menopause. I think some of them are born in the menopause. But they also have reasons for having low sexual hormones. Their testosterone levels can become low for some other reason. if you use anti-epileptic medication that really suppresses the vitamin D level, so you can develop osteoporosis, and if you're tiny boned, if you weigh below 55 kilos, you can develop osteoporosis because you basically start off with less bone than me with my much bigger bones. And if in older people, and this is becoming a very interesting field for research, is falling. People fall, old people fall and they break their bones. And the more you fall, the more the chances are that you're going to break your hip. So if you've had more than 3 falls during the past year, you must also know that you can break a bone. And then obviously exercise is important, calcium is important, don't smoke. In the Western Cape we do have a high use of alcohol in certain groups of people, so alcohol abuse is bad for bones. So vitamin D, very important. We go out with sun blocks on our skins, we don't make vitamin D in the skin. Really, for religious purposes, people are covered when they go outside, the women are covered. If you sit in your office the whole day from 9 to 5, you don't see the sun. If you live in Cape Town, you don't see the sun in winter. So there are many risk factors for having low vitamin D levels. And we know that vitamin D is very important for the absorption of calcium. So if you don't have vitamin D, it doesn't matter that you're taking enough calcium. You can't absorb the calcium. Mm-hmm. So now I've given you 10 mouthfuls of risk factors.
Yeah, no. What about people suffering from, various kinds of diseases?
Mm.
Does that also, can that also develop into osteoporosis?
You know, not the disease itself. As I mentioned, hormonal diseases like an overactive thyroid or a malignancy like a cancer or eating disorders, those diseases can definitely lead to osteoporosis, either by way of the disease itself or by the treatment of the disease. Because we know cancer can cause a low bone mass, but we also know that the chemotherapy that's given for many cancers like breast cancer is also a culprit in making your bone density go low.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that women are more affected by osteoporosis than men?
Yes, it is still true, but I think that gap is becoming closer and closer because 1 in 3 women will develop the disease. And remember, in this country, all race groups are prone to developing osteoporosis. And the other thing is it's 1 in 5 men. So it's not that far apart. 1 in 3 women, 1 in 5 men will develop osteoporosis after the age of 60. Because we're a developing country, men and women in this country over the age of 60 fracture their hips at the same rate. So there's no distinction then. So, and we know that men have many other, what we call comorbid diseases. They do have other diseases like heart disease and just a variety of other diseases when they get older because they're naughtier than us women, I think. But that also, because then if they fracture a hip, they tend to die more often than women do just because of all those other diseases. The scary thing about a hip fracture is that 30% of people will die within that first year after having had a hip fracture. Not because of the osteoporosis, but because of the complications of either having to be in bed after your operation, complications due to the operation, because it's old people that fracture their hips.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the scary thing, that more than 50% of the rest will never be independent again. So if you can prevent that, and it's so easy to prevent that,
Yes, that's what I want to know. You can prevent it, but how can one prevent osteoporosis?
Very easily. You must just listen to what your mother told you when you were young.
Mm.
You've got to eat all your veggies and drink your milk. So diet, very important. A diet rich in calcium is important. And we say that you have a that 3 dairy portions, that gets you to your daily requirement of calcium. 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day is considered sufficient for your balance. But then you also need vitamin D, and we say about 400 to 800 international units of vitamin D if you take that as a supplement. Otherwise, you need to spend about 20 to 30 minutes every day with bare arms in the sun. And there needs to be sun. It can't be cloud cover. Otherwise, you block out the UV rays that make the vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
If you drink, don't drink more than 2 glasses of whatever you're drinking. And that's just a general comment I'm making about alcohol. Smoking, stop smoking, because smoking suppresses the sex hormones in both men and women. So it's not sexy to smoke. So those sex hormones are your bone protective hormones. Exercise, very, very, very important, because it's the only physiological way where we can stimulate bone formation, all those bone forming cells. So if you do weight bearing exercise and walking, it is still considered the best exercise. And it's not marathon running. And then you also need a core strengthening exercises. So muscle strengthening exercise is good. Weight bearing exercises is important to stimulate those bones.
So you can't get away from this. Nutrition, exercise plays a very important role, and of course the vitamin D.
Absolutely.
Now, just one thing with regards to calcium. You know, we are always advised to have especially women, are advised to have their calcium in some way or the other. How much of calcium supplement can we take?
You know, what we obviously recommend is that you try and get your calcium in your diet. If you don't drink dairy or eat dairy or have a bad diet, obviously you need to supplement. But we don't recommend more than 1 supplement a day, so that your total intake still remains about 1,000 milligrams of calcium. Because we do get calcium in our diets even if we don't eat dairy. But you probably need 1 supplement a day if you don't get to your 3 dairy portions, or if you're a vegan or just a vegetarian, you need about 2 kilograms of broccoli per day to get to your 1,000. So you do need 1 supplement. And what people need to remember is that many of the supplements out there are calcium carbonate supplements. You don't find calcium free in nature. It's always bound to a salt. So calcium carbonate, it's almost like eating chalk that you write on a board with. But calcium carbonate supplements need to be taken with a meal, because it needs stomach acid to split the calcium from that carbonate salt. So it's better to have your calcium supplement at with your evening meal.
Mm-hmm.
Many doctors prescribe it before you go to bed. Patients wake up bloated and constipated because there's nothing, the calcium just lying in that stomach. So very important how you take your calcium.
Okay. Yes, this was something that was concerning, you know, when to take your calcium supplement. In any case, we're going to take a very short break. When we return, we continue talking about osteoporosis. A reminder to our listeners, if perhaps you have any questions, please feel free to contact us. The number to dial 011-854-1548. We also have an SMS or WhatsApp number, 082-8492-786. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. Okay, we're talking about osteoporosis, and just a reminder to our listeners that our lines are open if perhaps you have any questions or concern. And my guest today is Teresa Hu. She's the CEO of the National Osteoporosis Foundation of South Africa, also known as NOSA, and she's talking to us from Cape Town, alhamdulillah. Now, what we want to talk to you about now is osteoporosis diagnosis. Now, apparently to find out, if you have osteoporosis, there are several tests which can be done to measure bone densities, and these would include the DXA scan and QCT, a blood test, bone density. But Teresa, I do understand that you have experience, or rather, you are experienced as a DXA operator for more than 15 years in various drug trials, including osteoporosis studies. Perhaps you can explain to us what exactly this DXA scan is all about, and also some of the latest findings.
Okay, well, the DXA basically is just a nice name for the bone density. It stands for dual energy X-ray absorptiometry. So basically, it's a painless, almost X-ray-like examination that is done to determine what your bone density is in the lower lumbar vertebra and also in the hip, because those are two different types of bone, so we measure the bone density of those two areas. What we need to remember is that many fractures, osteoporotic fractures, occur when the bones are not yet osteoporotic on those scans. So if you've already had a fall after minor trauma and broken a hip or a forearm, you probably don't even need a DXA scan. You have osteoporosis. So the interpretation of the DXA, I can make a few comments, because to go into real detail about what is osteoporosis on the scan is probably can be a little bit confusing. What I need to say is many DXA operators or radiologists or radiographers, when they see your scan, they make a comment like, "Ooh, you've got the bones of an 80-year-old when you're only 30 or 40. It's nonsense. They cannot make a comment like that. What the DXA do with us, it compares your bones to age and sex match normals and see whether it's normal for that, and we call that the Z score. And then it also measures your bone density to where you were supposed to have had a peak bone density, there where your bones were at their densest, and it's usually between the age of 25 and 30. And then we can compare it to that bone density to see how much bone you've lost according to your age, whether it's normal or not. So it's a nice tool to have. You can't see that you have osteoporosis by doing an X-ray only, because you must have lost about 40 or 50% of bone before it's seen on an X-ray, and the converse is also true. Sometimes you see bad bones and then it's normal on a bone density. Why do we need a bone density? If we decide to put you on treatment, we need to follow up after 18 months to 2 years. We do another bone density, needs to be done on the same machine to see whether your therapy is working. And many patients ask and tell you, "Oh, my therapy is not working because my bone density stayed the same." The whole aim of any therapy for osteoporosis is to maintain the bone that you have and to make it stronger so that it doesn't break easily. Because if you catch the osteoporosis early enough, you can prevent up to 70% of future fractures.
Okay. Anyway, is there a cure for osteoporosis?
No, there's not a cure. If you're 60 years old and you've got risk factors for osteoporosis, you're never going to have the bone density of a 25-year-old again.
Mm-hmm.
But what we can do is to make your remaining bones strong, and with most medications out there, we can even push it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But patients also need to remember that every response to any therapy is an individual thing, because you and your neighbor both go to the same doctor, both of you have osteoporosis, but she had a 12% increase in bone density and you only had 2%. And that's when the aunties start telling each other, well, they're on a better medication, even if they're only on the same medication. So responses to any therapy is an individual thing. And they mustn't start comparing their DEXA scans with each other, because there are many things that influence the results.
Okay. All right. Now, on your website, osteoporosis.org.za, there's a risk assessment that can be taken. Well, I think I should suggest our listeners to actually go out and try this assessment, as it gives you an indication whether you might be at risk or not, and also whether you should visit a medical practitioner or not. Would you like to comment on that quickly?
Oh yes, it's basically those risk factors that I mentioned to you earlier. There's just a score linked to each of those risk factors. So there are three categories. If you actually have one or more in category A or B, you know that you are at risk of developing osteoporosis. What I need to say is, like anything in life, you can have all these risk factors and not develop osteoporosis, or you can have none of them and still develop osteoporosis. Risk factors are just guidelines for you to know that you must go and have your bones checked out if you have many of these risk factors. And if you have normal bones, after you've had your risk factors checked out, and then you're safe. But this is a guideline for most people, just to make sure that they do follow a healthy lifestyle. And and I know you've seen our theme for World Osteoporosis Day, that was on the 20th of October, is basically love your bones. And remember that this thing, this skeleton you have, you only have one body to live in, so you have to look after it. So it's like doing maintenance on your house. I always tell our patients, do your maintenance with your body too. You need to do that every day. Healthy lifestyle, exercise, diet.
Okay, and just finally, I know, just with regards to your foundation, what do you do to accomplish your mission for the foundation?
Oh, you know, our vision is obviously to have pills and diagnostic tools available to everyone. We know that that's a very difficult task, so we need to do that. But we educate, we do fundraising, we have training courses, we have social media. Our awareness has gone the social media route because it's much cheaper for us. We don't have the money to do TV ads because it just costs too much money. But we're on Twitter, and we're on email, and we're on Facebook, and we've got Pinterest. We're on Pinterest. So if you want to go and want to know anything more about osteoporosis, go and have a look at our website. And the other thing is, we've got a dedicated helpline for patients who need urgent information about osteoporosis. And even if you're looking for a doctor in your area, we act as a referral center.
Okay, and your contact details?
It will be on the website, and our website is www.osteoporosis.org.za. And our helpline is 086-110-2265.
Sorry, can you just repeat that?
086-110-2265.
06-110-2265.
That's correct.
Well, thank you so much for speaking to us today, Teresa. We certainly do appreciate it. And yes, I'm sure that you've shared a lot of information with us once again.
It's such a pleasure. You can speak to me again next year, because I think I spoke to you last year.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Susanna.
Okay, you too. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, listeners, that was Teresa Yu O'Howe, the CEO of the National Osteoporosis Foundation of South Africa, also known as NOFSA. And if you want more information, really do go and visit the website. It's www.osteoporosis.org.za, and you can also contact the helpline 086-110-2265. Well, that's it then from us. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.